Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. I'm Dan Bardell, and each and every Friday, myself and co-host George Ellick will preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action, well, what's left of it, alongside Bet365's Steve Free. On this week's show, we're going to talk Trent and his powers of creation, Kevin De Bruyne is back with a bang, and how Martinelli switched from automatic to a manual. Hello guys, good to speak to you both, good to see you both healthy, fit and well. Premier League, I mean, there is a danger that we do this show and then it never airs, or that the games that we talk about don't happen. They happen in future, and it looks like everything we've said is a load of rubbish. So who knows what is going to go on. George, do we need some kind of circuit breaker in the Premier League? Only five games as we record are taking place. It's all a bit carnage-like, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, I'm no expert here on public health matters, so I'm not going to pretend to be. But it was interesting to hear Emma Hayes talking last night about the Chelsea women's team, who lost 4-0 against Wolfsburg in what was a pretty surprising result in the Women's Champions League, and got knocked out. And she came out afterwards and said, you know, it was that the players are feeling an unbelievable amount of anxiety, basically around the situation, around the health issues surrounding COVID at the moment. And I think that's probably the key to all of this is player welfare and welfare of just everyone involved in the sport. You don't want these young men and young women, because this isn't just about the Premier League, this is about the whole pyramid and both men's and women's sport. You don't want these people to be in positions where they're having to play games of football when they feel unsafe, or if there are health issues. So if the clubs need a circuit breaker, that is what they should do. The fact that it'll cause fixture congestion in the future is a concern. Obviously, we have no idea if this situation at the moment is going to be months, weeks, or longer. So whether we're in a position to play those games that are being postponed in February, we have absolutely no idea. So it's very difficult. You know, I'm doing this podcast now. I'm doing another podcast this afternoon, previewing the EFL games. We have no idea what games are going ahead. And then tomorrow, I'm on the EFL highlight show, which is a 2-hour show. And at the moment, I think we're going to be talking for about an hour and 50 minutes about it. So it's going to be an interesting weekend. Fingers crossed, we get the football to watch to take our mind off what's maybe going on elsewhere. And most importantly, fingers crossed, people going to games as well, fans going to games, stay safe.
Yeah, I did a preview show this morning that I do every week, another Premier League preview. We didn't even bother previewing the games. We just did a mid-season awards instead, because nice. It just doesn't feel worth previewing the games. But I'm sure this podcast will still be worth listening to, even though I've just completely poo-pooed any idea of doing previews.
Yeah, good job. Stuff. Good job the sponsors aren't listening, eh?
Yeah, Steve Whitty, have you any opinion?
No.
Yeah. Steve Whitty.
Yeah. You've been waiting for that one, haven't you?
That genuinely just popped into my head. I don't know why. So, it works on two levels, Steve.
It's as if, like, Villa have won away at bottom of the table, Norwich. You know, you got a real spring in your step, haven't you? Yeah, 5 from 7. Yeah. No, I echo the sentiments that George said. Clearly, we want everybody safe. Although I was quite surprised by the statement from the EFL yesterday. Did I read about 25% of players not being vaccinated or any intention to be vaccinated? Was that right, George?
Yeah, 25% I think there was basically the EFL spoke to all the players and asked them whether they'd been vaccinated, whether they intended to get vaccinated, and whether they had no intention to get vaccinated. And quite a surprising amount seemed to have the intention, which suggests that any attempts to educate the players has been somewhat successful, because that would suggest these are players who weren't willing initially and are now looking to do so. But yeah, 25% not getting vaccinated is a concern. I know that there will be people listening to this podcast who themselves don't want to get vaccinated and think it's unnecessary for healthy young men to do so. I would argue pretty strongly against that. Of course, it is everyone's choice, but as is the case with all of these things, the consequences of your actions are something you have to take responsibility for. And within football, you know, people will often say the jab doesn't stop you getting COVID, it doesn't stop you passing on COVID. Well, that might be the case, but it does significantly bring down the chances of you getting seriously ill from COVID. It does significantly bring down the chances of you passing it on as well. So, and this isn't an issue with just football, this is an issue with young men across the country, where the lowest demographic of vaccinated is young men who seemingly think that they're healthy enough and that their immune system will be enough to keep themselves and those close to them safe. But as Jurgen Klopp said in his programme notes last night, I would defer to those experts, and you know, I would listen to the people who are scientists who know what they're doing, and I wouldn't look at the theories as to why their advice may be disingenuous, because I've got a feeling they're on the right side of the argument.
Well, before we get into the podcast that I've essentially just labelled pointless, what's never pointless is signing up to The Athletic. And at the moment, you can save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sports. So that's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. Treat yourself this Christmas and go to theathletic.com/footballpod. First game of the weekend then is Leeds v Arsenal, Steve. Leeds against Manchester City midweek. I mean, Man City can take the best of teams apart. I think there is circumstances out of Leeds' control. They've had injuries all season. Their back line's been decimated. But some of the defending was not pretty at all.
No. I still don't think they're marching down to the Championship, Dan. I mean, they are 7-2 to be relegated. And there's not a great deal of noise either about the future of Bielsa. Is there really? Clearly, you know, this is a Leeds side who were flying last season. I think there was only 2 points between them last season. You know, between these two sides, it's amazing, really. There's already 13 this as well. And there was no repeat of that shock result at the Etihad last season for them, really. You know, where they won there with 10 men. I think Cooper got sent off near half-time, didn't he? But this 7-0 thumping now. I suppose the difference was that they put their chances away this time, Manchester City. 15 of the 31 shots were on target. The same 11, I think, that played against Chelsea a few days earlier. Some tired legs, tired minds out there. I think it was the first time in 568 games that a Bielsa side had conceded seven. I think last time that I lost by that amount was a seven-goal thriller up here against Stoke back in 1934 when I was a young lad. I thought I mentioned that before.
I was going to actually have that game off.
Yeah, before you got in. But speaking to a guy that goes home and away, who works for us, he was kind of saying that that's maybe the first time that a Leeds United side have got a down tools a little bit under Bielsa, and it was a little bit worrying. But clearly, you know, there are reasons for this run of form for Leeds with a whole host of injuries and COVID, etc. But arguably, you know, like a lot of teams as well.
Yeah, is Bielsa really in no trouble at all, George? Because I think, you know, he's got so much credit in the bank. The Leeds fans absolutely love him. But I look at my own team in Villa, and Dean Smith had credit in the bank. And when there were signs of trouble, he got the boot. If Leeds continue to fall towards the relegation zone, would they really not change the manager?
It is very, very hard to say. There comes a point where, you know, where having tried so hard and for so long to get back into the Premier League, if Leeds are genuinely on the brink of getting relegated or of being embroiled in a relegation battle come the last five or six games of the season, then there will be a decision to be made. Because as we know, when your team isn't performing to the best of its abilities and the transfer window is closed, there is only one thing you can change, and that's the manager. You can't sack the players and bring in new players. You can't sack the fans. You can't sack the board. The only change you can make is by paying off the manager and getting a new manager in. And that's why we see, even quite often when it won't be a manager's fault, that things aren't going well on the pitch. It's the one thing that you can have control over. So I'm sure it would come into scrutiny. I think Bielsa himself, there would be some trust amongst Leeds fans and you know, the board themselves, that Bielsa is experienced enough. He's walked away from jobs before, that he, if he feels like he isn't the man to take this team forward anymore, that he might be the person to step back and say, you know what, it might be time to get somebody else in. But you know, he is still a visionary tactically. He's still somebody who has elevated the expectations of Leeds United to well beyond what we thought would be where they'd be when he took over in a few years' time. So, still got credit in the bank. Leeds fans won't want him to go. But, yeah, that was pretty concerning what we saw on against City. They had... I mean, I think it's in part because of the way they approach games. They're always looking to cause the opposition problems rather than just to contain. But against a side like City in that kind of form, you're asking for trouble.
Do you think the manner of the Chelsea defeat, losing that one so late, Steve, played a part?
Yeah, definitely. It was the same 11, wasn't it, that Bielsa put out just a few days later. And as George mentioned there, you know, it was just, they were so open there compared to Wolves just a few days earlier, who played Manchester City with 10 men who were just tight and compact. And it's just the way that Bielsa plays. And they got massively, massively tore apart. But hopefully from a Leeds perspective, you know, they can pick themselves up and go again. You know, the odds are still very favourable for them. Me as a neutral, I really enjoy watching Leeds United play. Unfortunately, they've got some real big sides over the next couple of weeks, you know, as well as Arsenal, you know, Liverpool away, and then probably the biggest one of all, the former European champions, Aston Villa, at home on the 28th of December. So, big huge test for Leeds United.
It's worth also pointing out some context around this Leeds result, the 7-0, because even though, you know, anyone who watched it, it did kind of feel like City were going to score whenever they went forward. But they did score some great goals. You know, De Bruyne's strike was obviously, the second De Bruyne strike was fantastic. But if you look at, and there are pitfalls to looking at XG in individual games, and I know some people will probably switch off the podcast as soon as I mention it, but it is important just to note that, you know, in my head as well, that the Watford performance against City and the Wolves performance against City were much more pragmatic. You know, they even though Watford under Ranieri are a team who looked to attack wherever possible, against City they did drop in and they did say, you know what, we're going to play a low block and we're going to let you have a lot of the ball. But the XG numbers, you know, against Leeds, it was 3.31 to 0.23. So City outperforming their XG by nearly four goals. And they're remarkably similar to the values in the other two games. Wolves was 3 XG to 0.08. Watford was 4.03 to 0.68. So they actually created better opportunities against Watford than they did against Leeds. And even the 2-1 win against West Ham that preceded the Villa win was 2.72, 0.17, which is pretty close to the Leeds one. So there is a slight argument here to say that the 7-0 paints this in a worse light than what actually happened on the pitch. But it's always important to contextualise stats with the eye tests. And anyone who watched, I mean, myself included, anyone who watched that game, that figure does seem fairly low. I think if you're looking at maybe expected threat rather than expected goals, it did feel like every single time City had the ball, which was for most of the game, and were entering into the final third, they looked pretty dangerous.
Well, here's some stats for you, Steve. Arsenal have the joint best home record in the Premier League with Manchester City, 22 points from 9 games. Contrastingly, they've only got 7 points from 8 games on the road, though. But at home now... They look a decent proposition, and when they get ahead, they seem to be able to hold on to it, and in the case of the other night, build on it.
Yeah. I mean, who'd have thought that after three games, Dan? I mean, they were out to 12-1 after those three games, after that 5-0 defeat to Manchester City, 3 defeats and 3 no goal scores, 9 conceded, and it's not down to Aaron Ramsdale, but he came in the game after that. I think it was Norwich, and they've kicked on since. Second best in the goals prevented charts behind the goalkeeper of Wolves, Saar, as well. 12 goals conceded from 64 shots faced on target. So we've all been waxing lyrical, really, about Ramsdale. Initially, we weren't... Well, I certainly wasn't sure about the transfer, but he's gone great guns. And they've been brilliant at home. They lost to Chelsea early on, didn't they? Very early on, but they've won 7 and drew 1 since. So, yeah, like you say, the best record along with Manchester City as well. And we'll see whether that record stays intact till the 1st of January when they have a very good-looking game against Manchester City as well.
I will say, I think Gabriel's actually their most important player, and I don't think he played the first few games of the season, so the run has actually coincided with him coming into the defence as well. Really, really good defender, Gabriel, and potential captaincy candidate as well. George, have they actually been galvanised by the Aubameyang fallout? I mean, there's been plenty of podcasts on this feed talking about it. There's also been loads of stuff in The Athletic as well, but, you know, they've got a win off the back of the Aubameyang fallout this week against a good West Ham side who they're challenging for the top four with. Is he going to get back in? I mean, what's going to happen?
I mean, I don't think he's going to get back in. It doesn't look like that. That's going to be the case anyway. And I think there's an argument, which I'll come on to when I give my tip here, that they are much better off, given the personnel that they now play, they're much better off without him in the side. I think, to an extent, the Everton result represented rock bottom in a way, where Aubameyang, you know, that was the beginning of the Aubameyang fallout, where no one really knew what was going on, but it was clear that something had happened. They went ahead in a game again and sacrificed a lead to lose against a side in Everton who can't buy a win from anywhere. They lost in an injury time screamer, which just kind of takes the gloss. I mean, whatever the reverse of gloss off is, I mean, it makes that result and makes the what happened even harder to take. And they were going to go, one of two things looked like it was going to happen. It was either all going to unravel or they had to bounce back from what was a blow off the pitch and a blow on the pitch. And they put in two incredibly polished professional performances since that, where they beat Southampton 3-0. Southampton had the better of the game in the first 10 minutes, then completely at odds to what we've seen from Arsenal this season. They scored against the run of play and then just grew into the game as the further it went on, and then ended it fully justifying their 3-0 win. And then again against West Ham. West Ham had a couple of chances early on. Fornals very nearly scored in the first 10 minutes. But as soon as they went ahead, you know, they could have won by more than two. And you know, they missed the penalty as well in the game. So it does feel to me like things are maybe have kind of bounced onto an upward trajectory off the back of some adversity, which can happen. And they feel in a much better place now with a lot of the questions. You know, it felt like a club with a lot of uncertainty around Arteta, a lot of uncertainty around whether any good form was sustainable. But these two performances we've seen in the last couple of weeks have been far clear against two like decent opposition, tough teams to beat, have been well clear of much of what we saw early on in the season when they were still picking up wins.
Yeah, Martinelli's come into the side, George. Mikel Arteta said after the West Ham game, he's able to put some gears into his play instead of doing everything at 100 miles per hour. I guess that means that he was, you know, he's a sensational footballer. He's obviously very, very quick, but maybe he's toned it down a little bit to get the decision making right, make the right pass, make the right run. And he's been really, really important the last few games.
Yeah, he's been massive. I mean, it's interesting to hear Arteta say that, given that the opener against West Ham was mainly due to his explosive pace, getting in behind and running through. But he's a player that I think a lot of Arsenal fans have been pretty surprised as to how little they've seen of him. You know, he burst onto the scene with all those goals in the Europa League a long time ago now, and he's still a very young player. But you look at the career paths of Bukayo Saka and of Emile Smith Rowe in that time, and Martinelli's been lagging well behind, but. Now, often for these players, it does take some time to finesse their game, and that's clearly what Arteta's been working on. And you know, it's quite rare to see a young player come in from the wilderness and step up into regular first team action and do it as well as Martinelli has done. So at the moment, it looks like a masterstroke to have taken him out of the fire for a bit. And he is just another player who Arsenal have so many exciting attacking players who can play well off a front man who can hold the ball up. And that is what I'm getting to when I come to my tip here, where I think Alexander Lacazette is a far better fit for this Arsenal side now. When you've got Saka and you've got Odegaard and you've got Smith Rowe and you've got Martinelli, all these players who can carry the ball, give and go, run in behind, break the high line. Unlike somebody like Pepe, who, you know, has obviously struggled massively for form this season. He scored a few goals at the back end of last season, but he's somebody who, you know, you want to be a ball carrier who's fairly selfish, who will get balls into the box, will look to shoot where possible himself. But with those four playing off Lacazette, who is so good with his back to goal, you know, he's a striker who will score goals. He can provide that penalty box threat, but he's brilliant at holding up the ball. You saw the pass through to Martinelli for the opener against West Ham. He's a much cleverer front man, a much more well-rounded front man compared to an Aubameyang, who is somebody who will either look to drift into the channels or play off the last man. So whether by design or by luck, I think Arsenal are in a much better position as an attacking unit with Lacazette as the focal point rather than Aubameyang.
Yes, I think it's worth saying he played number 10 a fair bit in France, so he has got that creative streak in him. Do you want to give me your tip then, George? You've teased it.
Yeah, it's looking at those players who are kind of playing off Lacazette at the moment. Because I think with Calvin Phillips out, Leeds are just a horror show defensively. And it's impossible. Even if Arsenal don't win this game, you've got to anticipate that they're going to get chances to score. The only way they don't win, in my view, is if it becomes if Leeds can find their attacking verve, and this becomes a bit of a shootout in terms of who can score more. But I anticipate Arsenal at 5-6 could well be a bit of value here. But looking at those players who are going to be playing off Lacazette, you've got Martinelli, who's 7-4 to score any time. Saka is 13-5 to score any time. Smith Rowe, 3-1. But the one I like is Ødegaard, who play as a 10. He's scored 3 goals in his last 4. He's getting into goal-scoring opportunities regularly. He's far more of an attacking... he's far more of a goal threat now, as I say, with Lacazette in the side, almost as his foil. So in a game where you've got to be anticipating that Arsenal are going to get chances to score, I think of those 4 players in behind, I mean, Lacazette is the favourite to score any time. He's 13-10. But I think that 13-5 about Ødegaard is probably the value way to go. I mean, the 3-1 Smith-Rowe is also interesting, but... You know, you want to wait for team news maybe before deciding between Smith Rowe and Martinelli, whereas Ødegaard should be a surefire starter.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Game two that we're going to preview today is Newcastle versus Manchester City, Sunday 2:15 kickoff. And Steve, we've spoke about Manchester City a bit. Undoubtedly phenomenal squad, so many creative, explosive players in there. Kind of forget about Kevin De Bruyne a little bit this season because he's barely played, and then he comes in and takes Leeds apart. I mean, he's just such a gifted footballer, isn't he?
Yeah, and worryingly, of course, he's only just getting up to speed as well, isn't he? I don't think he's got an assist yet this season. But a couple of goals, brilliant to see him back. He's had an injury stroke COVID hit season. I suppose you could say that about a lot of players, but as a neutral, you just love watching Kevin De Bruyne playing. If it goes ahead on Boxing Day, I'm looking forward to... I'm going to actually go and take my parents to Man City against Leicester because they wanted to go and see a game on Boxing Day. We always go on Boxing Day to see a game.
Yeah.
And they kind of pointed out, you know, let's go to Manchester City if we get 3 tickets, Steve. So
you were trying to get to Walsall, weren't you?
I think Crewe. I said to them, well, we got Crewe or Port Vale, Mum and Dad. Where do you want to go? They said, well... Where are Man City playing, Steve? So, yeah, listen, it's great to see him up to speed. And of course, he's going for a third time for the PFA Player of the Year Award, which hasn't happened before. There are a number of players that have won it twice on the bounce. I think Ronaldo's won it twice on the bounce. And Thierry Henry has won it twice on the bounce as well. So we've cut him in from 20 into 12-1. He's got the best football of the season ahead of him, you would have thought, and it's a mouth-watering prospect as well. I mean, we have been talking about Bernardo Silva this season, haven't we? And just the fact that they've got KDB waiting in the wings as well just goes to prove why Manchester City are 8-15 favourites for the title. And they're only around 18-1 to win the treble. Clearly, they haven't done that yet. They seem to get close every single year, but it hasn't happened. 33 wins already this season in the Premier League in 41 games. He's fantastic. Pep's side have now scored 500 times in 207 games that he's managed them. It's brilliant. And you watch, it'll be 0-0 against Leicester when I go.
I mean, they might be able to give Bernardo Silva a rest if De Bruyne is back, George. I mean, Bernardo Silva's played pretty much every game, hasn't he? But now Kevin De Bruyne is back. At least he might be able to come out for a game or two and then come back in his scintillating form that he's been in. But they've got talent all over the pitch, haven't they?
It was such a sign of class from De Bruyne. I mean, all this talk about Bernardo, Pep being asked if KDB being out the side meant that Bernardo was able to be a better player and impact games more. De Bruyne comes back in and puts in that performance. Class is quite clearly permanent. I don't think we can necessarily argue that he was out of form either. It was just some fitness issues preventing him and the form of other players from getting regular minutes. But, I mean, what a player. And, you know, the PFA Player of the Year Award isn't one that I necessarily like that. I mean, I think individual awards in football are fairly arbitrary anyway, but often with the PFA award, recency bias plays a massive part. And if Kevin De Bruyne is going to be in that kind of form and City are 8-15 to win the league, the 12-1 about him winning that award has got to be value, because often the whatever happens between August and December may as well be put in the bin. It's whoever's basically pulling up trees at the time. His numbers may not be good enough, but I think that 12-1 could well look big come March or April. And also the 18-1 about them to win the treble. I just, you know, European football is at a very, very low ebb at the moment. You're looking at who are the key challenges to City in the Champions League. You've got Bayern Munich are the obvious ones to be taking them on, but who else? You know, Spanish football is not in a good place at the moment. You've got a Chelsea side who are 8-1 compared to City's 8-15 to win the Champions League, and I'd probably fancy them, you know, if they were to meet in the final again, to be heavy favourites. Liverpool are quite clearly challengers, but you do wonder if this season the Premier League is probably their priority in order to try and wrestle it back with fans, touch wood, in the stadium come May. So, and then the FA Cup, which again, I mean, they're quite clearly the best team in the country. So, you know, I'm not interested in backing the 8-15 about City to win the league, but 18-1 on them to win the treble seems like you're going to get a pretty good sweat out of that, because they are just scintillatingly, relentlessly good.
Yeah, Newcastle, Steve. I watched the game last night against Liverpool. I thought they put up a decent fight, a decent show. Could have easily scored more goals than they did. And I thought, as defeats go, it was relatively positive against Liverpool.
Yeah, of course, Shelby scoring. He would have enjoyed that, wouldn't he, in front of the cop. Don't think he'd have enjoyed his back pass, though, which was... No. I think that's just an all too familiar tale of Newcastle this season as they limped towards the January transfer window. No selfies or a lap of honours after the Leicester game last week, where Leicester City were there for the taking, frankly, weren't they? But it was another shocking second half performance from them. So let's see what happens in January, Dan. I see Nicky Hammond is going there, according to reports in The Athletic that I've read this morning. Nicky Hammond was at the Albion, technical director a few years ago at the Albion. Two words, Alan Pardew. That's all I'm going to say and move on very quickly. And just going back to the Albion theme as well, 1-17 Newcastle. I think only the Albion have been in that kind of position before and pulled off the great escape. And, you know, they're going for their second victory, Newcastle. Albion's second victory in that great run back then, 15, 16 years ago, was against Manchester City as well. So admittedly, City back in those days had Danny Mills and Joey Barton. City now have KDB and Joe Cancelo. So there is a bit of a difference there. I just remember, you know, the arrival of Kevin Campbell and Kieran Richardson back in January was a huge boost for the Albion. And then clearly Newcastle are going to have to try and do that now just to get some big names in, some big performances from... you'll have to wait and see who they get. Clearly a fullback, a ball-playing centre-half, maybe a centre-forward, maybe a centre-midfielder. You know, good luck to Nicky Hammond and the team trying to get that. But they are 4-6 to go down. So it's not as if they're 100-1 on to go down, but it's clearly going to be a big test for them.
Kieran Trippier seems to be the main man that is getting linked with Newcastle, George. As good a player as he is, you know, is that going to be the difference between staying up and not?
I mean, probably not on its own, no. I mean, he is somebody who provides very, very good set-piece delivery, which can be pretty important when it comes to a very low-margin contest like a relegation battle, where any marginal gain you can get, if you can score, what, 6, 7, 8 set-piece goals between January and the end of the season, that's going to make a massive impact to your chance of staying up. The irony is that Javier Manquillo, who generally plays right back for Newcastle when fit, has been one of, if not their best player this season. So it's not necessarily an area where they need to strengthen. But you know, he's clearly, you know, he's a player who would never have been linked to Newcastle before the takeover. He is the kind of calibre of player that they want to be signing. There isn't, you know, we've discussed on the show before the issues that Newcastle are going to have, where I can't see any Premier League club wanting necessarily to do good business with them. I think most Premier League clubs will want to do what they can to see them relegated after the wrangling over the takeover itself. But Eddie Howe does have a relationship with him. He was the one who brought him to Burnley in his short, ill-fated spell as Burnley manager. So there is that. And, you know, Atleti are probably going to have no issues with you know, if they meet the price or if they meet the agreement to bring him over to let him go to Newcastle. So definitely the right calibre of signing, not necessarily the right age in terms of a long-term deal, but yeah, I mean, he's better than what they've got, so it's got to be a positive.
Yeah, the fixture computer, Steve, not kind to Newcastle. Liverpool away, followed by playing Manchester City. But how did rest Callum Wilson, Almiron and Willock on Thursday night? So they'll be fresh coming into this one for the weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I was not that surprised that he was rested, Wilson. I was certainly surprised how well Newcastle started. But there's some massive games for them. Clearly the two Manchester clubs at home, if they do go ahead, the fans behind them as well create a good atmosphere, they'll be given a chance. And you know what, Dan, Newcastle at home to Manchester City over recent seasons, it's different management now, and but I think it was 4-3 at home last season that they lost, then it was 2-2 the season before, they beat them 2-1 the season before that. So this is a game.
Steve Bruce back for this game.
Yeah, get Brucey back. But this is a game, I think, where the Magpie fans will certainly, you know, get behind their team and hopefully, certainly from a bookmaker's point of view, stop Manchester City winning as they seem to be doing every week at the moment.
And how do you think this one plays out, Steve?
João Cancelo hasn't scored for quite a while. In fact, his last Premier League goal was against Newcastle. He's had 30 shots, really? 36 shots since, not a goal. 9-1 to score at any time against this Newcastle defence. That's when I'm going to go.
You've got previous with the fullback shouts as well, Steve.
Yeah.
With Cancelo, I mean, I know we don't often do a bit of chat after the tip, but I was texting Steve this morning about this as well. He seems to be so underappreciated. It's one of those weird things where we all know that João Cancelo does incredible things with the football. And when we watch games...
Not in the fantasy world, he's not, is he?
He does, no, of course not. But he does these amazing, you know, you look at the assists and, the way that he's able to manoeuvre a football from range. His passing range is absolutely unbelievable. His crossing is incredible. No one's surprised when he does it. And then as soon as the game's over, no one talks about him anymore. You know, it's all about Bernardo this season. We talk about Kevin De Bruyne. I think that João Cancelo has a massive shout to be one of the best and most technical and best to watch players in the Premier League. Like, no question. Why do we not talk about him for the PFA award? You know, you look at...
You said Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, but
me,
I mean, that was a bit of a joke because that would never happen. but if you're looking at, you know, the best players, Trent is an example where he gets, correctly so, can I say, like Trent Alexander-Arnold is an incredible creative outlet from, you know, we call it right back, but whatever position that now is, because it's not really part of the defence anymore. But Cancelo doesn't seem to get the same amount of credit. Maybe it's because he's versatile. Maybe it's because he can play on the left as well. I don't know. But he's one of my favourite footballers to watch in the world. Incredible player. At the top of his game right now, in amazing form.
That's a very nice chat, George, but how dare you do it after the tip? How dare you on this podcast? That is not what we do here at all.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Game 3, Spurs v Liverpool. Now, when Spurs last played, about 3 years ago, George, because that's how long it feels ago since I watched them play, they were on a decent run under Conte. So this game could be a little bit of a banana skin for Liverpool. I suppose they've firmed up, as you would expect, under Conte. They still can't get Kane for him, but they were looking better, weren't they?
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible how Harry Kane, even despite the improvement of form at Spurs, Kane is never the one getting in the goals. And Spurs, I guess, have benefited a little bit by maybe teams around them not picking up as many points as they'd hoped. Suddenly they're in seventh, but they've got three games in hand on Arsenal in fourth, and they're only 4 points behind them. So, you know, if you're taking games in hand into as a positive, you know, a positive thing for a team, then it looks like the top four is well within their grasp. The issue here when you're previewing this is that we have absolutely no idea how Spurs are going to show up here. No, we don't know how many players are going to be available, how many players are going to be out. Antonio Conte was clearly and visibly troubled by, you know, they were the first Premier League club to be really hit by the new wave of coronavirus. And you could tell his emotions were pretty fraught. And we don't know what impact that's going to have. You know, going back to what I mentioned at the top of the show about the, on Emma Hayes' comments, they're coming up against a Liverpool side who's, their schedule hasn't been impacted. Is that a positive thing or a negative thing? Are Spurs coming to this fresh as opposed to Liverpool who've had to play on Thursday night? We just don't know. There are so many unknowns here. Either way, it's going to be a difficult game for Liverpool, you have to think, with Spurs looking better. But I wouldn't necessarily have come into this with the point of view that Antonio Conte's had a lot of time to work on his methods with the squad, because there have clearly been issues in terms of illness within the squad itself.
Well, Harry Kane ever score against Dave? It's getting a bit silly now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was actually at that Norwich game, which does seem about 5 years ago, admittedly. And Harry Kane did have a number of shots. You could hear the crowd just willing him on to score. It's quite incredible that a player of his calibre has now had 32 shots, 14 of which have been on target, and he's still only managed to score that one goal. And if memory serves you right, that was away at Newcastle, where I think they had a look at the VAR for that one as well. So that could have been disallowed as well. Everyone's talked about the way that he plays, the dropping of deep, the linking up play. Of course, it was only a few years ago that Spurs hammered Liverpool 4-1 on their own patch as well, admittedly a different ground. And he managed to get two that day, with Son getting one and Dele Alli also scoring as well, another forgotten player at Tottenham. But it looks good so far under Conte. I thought it was never a 3-0 game against Norwich. I thought Norwich were particularly poor in front of goal. Pukki missing another chance as well. But it's only one goal conceded under him under the four Premier League games. Dan James scoring that goal as well. So I can't imagine the likes of Mane, Salah, Jota not missing the type of chances that Norwich had. So I'm looking forward to this game at the weekend.
Yeah, January's coming up, George, and there's absolutely no chance Harry Kane will move in January. The big deals like that very rarely happen in that market. But if Conte's coming in and Spurs, you'd think, would be challenging a little bit more than they were, is that Harry Kane now staying at Tottenham?
I think he's staying for the time being. I think any club who are willing to pay what Spurs would ask for Harry Kane, given his current form, need to...
Would Spurs accept 100 million now, do you think?
They'd accept
150, wasn't it, the price in the summer? Yeah. But would they accept 100 million now?
I think probably. I think they probably would. I think if City came back and said, yeah, we're still keen to do the deal, I think they'd be mad not to. And I think Antonio Conte would be very happy to get that money in the kitty in order to go out and spend it himself. But as I say, I don't think... I mean, Manchester City, their recruitment has been incredibly good over the last 5 or 6 years. But they have dodged two bullets, really. You think back to the Alexis Sanchez deal, where we all thought that he was off to City, ended up going to Manchester United. I mean, maybe things would have turned out differently, but his career hasn't really suggested so. I still think the Ronaldo deal would have been bizarre. And then Harry Kane as well. So the three kind of strikers, I guess, they've looked to replace Sergio Aguero with. And, you know, let's take a moment to appreciate what a great player he was, and the sad news this week, and just, you know, thank God that he's retiring from a healthy position, relatively, rather than anything happening to change that. But, you know, they've got a bit fortunate maybe in that, because I think Kane is clearly very, very out of sorts. I do think he'll score again, and I think the fact that he's going to be on the pitch whenever he's fit for Spurs means that inevitably the goals are going to come. And it wasn't long ago that he was spearheading England's attack to a Euros final. So although it might feel like a lifetime ago. So I'm sure it will come good. But yeah, I mean, I cannot think that anyone would be foolish enough to spend the money that would be needed to prize him away from Spurs this January when he's so out of form.
and the betting man, Steve. Liverpool are 5-2 second favourites for the title, now well ahead of Chelsea, who dropped to 8-1. Is that fair?
I think so. Maybe there should be a bit of a closer gap between Manchester City and Liverpool. Liverpool scoring again. I mean, they always score, don't they? They scored at least one in the last 32 games in all comps as well. And just the fact that Salah just keeps scoring goals. I think he's obviously done the record now with Vardy goals and assists as well. So it's brilliant. Players are stepping up. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who seemed to have another good game in midweek as well. There is going to be concern maybe about the African Cup of Nations. I mean, I don't know whether you guys think that goes ahead or definitely not. You know, time will tell. So clearly, you know, they're...
I'm done guessing with stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, clearly there will be some key names leaving Anfield as well, which... I mean, if Liverpool's price wouldn't change a great deal, I don't think. Maybe just maybe a quarter of a point, maybe go 5-2 into 9-4 if the prices were currently, if it was called off. Because, you know, so we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But I think we got the right favourites. I think that the 8-1 Chelsea might tempt a few people. But clearly the way they're playing at the moment isn't fantastic, even though they were... Of course, James, he's still playing well. And of course, and there's a small matter of Trent Alexander-Arnold in the Liverpool side as well. And a bit of debate there as to who's the better player and who Gareth Southgate should make his first choice.
Lovely segue, Steve. You can present next week. Trent did last night become the first player to create 100-plus chances in the Premier League in 2021, George. His numbers now, they're just a joke.
Incredible. That's probably why he's mentioned more than João Cancelo. Yeah, I mean, he's just an unbelievable footballer, and that strike to put the cherry on the cake against Newcastle was unbelievable. I mean, that ball striking ability, we've seen him hit some pretty good free kicks in the past, but from open play, the power generated behind that would have been fairly amusing if Mike Dean's attempt to steal the show by running across the ball, if he'd been on the receiving end into the receiving end of one of the hardest strikes in Premier League history. I think maybe Trent would have had something to say about that, but it was no. I mean, he's
my Dean would have been in the back of the net as well.
Yeah,
I think.
It would have carried him with him.
Yeah,
I think it would have been his crowning moment in a glittering career. Mike Dean, that is, not Trent. But it's yeah, I mean, you're kind of one of those players where you run out of superlatives, really. He's almost reinventing the wheel when it comes to that position. We've seen fullbacks being reinvented for basically my whole lifetime. You know, if you think back, the best right back in the Premier League when I was a kid was Gary Neville. And you look at Trent now and you look at João Cancelo with the wing back era in between, where probably Dani Alves is the one you think of, or Marcelo, or, you know, these players where the position has developed so far. And I see sometimes, especially when talking about Reece James and talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold, where Liverpool fans and Chelsea like to argue who's better, their defensive records get brought into it. I mean, they have as much to do defensively these days as you know, your eights. You know, it's not their job, really. Their primary role on the pitch when they're playing a right back, although I don't want to call it right back, is to attack. And it's generally the position, especially when you're playing three at the back. You know, the wide centre backs are there to stop the wingers and kind of cut off the crosses into the box, and you've got the holding midfielder who drops in between to the centre backs to make it a four if needed. Like, it's not their role. And yes, that's probably why Gareth Southgate prefers Trippier, Walker, and James to Trent. But in terms of the job that he has at Liverpool, there's nobody in the world who could do it better, and we're absolutely blessed to have him.
And what's your prediction for this one, George?
I think because of the uncertainty around Spurs, I think you've got to side with Liverpool here. But they are very short. They're 8-15 to win the game, which is very, very short away from home at a Conte side. But I think you can back them -1 on the Asian handicap at just over even money at 2.03, meaning that if they win the game by just a solitary goal, you get your money back. And if they win by 2, 3, 4, then you're basically doubling your money, which seems a fair way to go. Because, you know, as I say, Spurs could be decimated by COVID. We've seen in the last couple of weeks that Liverpool are playing at a very, very high level. And if they repeat that performance, Spurs are going to have to be very good to stop Jota, to stop Salah, to stop Mane, and to stop Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I tell you what caught my eye against the Norwich game, clearly the class of opponents very different, was the how much Ben Davies was roaming forward, very comfortable on the ball. And he is a goal scorer waiting to happen. He hasn't scored.
Steve hasn't scored
since September 2017, admittedly away at Huddersfield. But put Ben Davies in your tracker. He's scoring soon for Spurs, believe me.
What is it with you and obscure fullback goal scorers? You can't get away from it. It's all you tip. You don't tip anything else.
Yeah, I do find one occasionally. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut occasionally.
Exactly. Oh, dear. I think that's just enough from us today. A bit of a different show, obviously, because we don't really know what's going on, but hopefully those three games all take place. Just enough time for me to remind you that if for some reason you're not a subscriber to The Athletic and you would like to change that, head to theathletic.com/footballpod and you will gain access to all the brilliant articles as well as ad-free podcasts for just £3.33 a month for an entire year. To take advantage of that, as I say, just go to theathletic.com/footballpod. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, George. And of course, thanks to all you guys for listening as well. Remember to hit the subscribe button so that you never miss a show. Mark Chapman, David Ornstein and company are back on this feed on Monday. You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. Enjoy all the football and have a great weekend. And when I say all the football, whatever takes place.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.